Hello, and welcome to LifeLab. I'm David Ponder.
And I'm Zach Schaefer.
We created a candid podcast for busy people. We get right to the point of our topics, and we keep them to 30 minutes or less.
We wanted to put our ideas out there, share it with people we love, and if it spreads, great.
Our show has no edits and no gimmicks.
Like it or don't, we initially started this project for ourselves, to record our thoughts for our kids, but our friends and family thought we should share it, so here you go.
Welcome. It's Life Lab again. This is David Ponder.
Zach Schaefer.
And today we're talking about what is probably, it's got to be the most important, you know, topic that we talk about. It's love.
Love. A few weeks ago when we talked about money, I had made the point that love was by far and away, in my opinion, the most valuable value, resource, concept, feeling that we have. And you agreed then, you agree now?
100%. 100%. Which is interesting because I looked and it shows up as third on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So if anyone's not familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's a pyramid that just basically talks about what humans need to survive. And it's behind physiological, food and water, and safety, which, okay. To me, it's different than those things. Those things are physical. But I even think love has a physical component to it. But there's a quote that, I mean, to go against that, there's a quote by the Dalai Lama that I really love that says, "When left alone, we will not survive." And he talks about all the support you need. I mean, as a baby, we can't even survive as humans. We're so social.
There's a whole book that came out 3 years ago called Social by, I believe he's at Harvard, Matthew Lieberman. And his whole message of that book was saying Maslow had it mostly right, except the first level for humans should be, and I believe he called it connection, not love. But he said that we don't progress to any of those things unless someone shows us love as a baby.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't survive as a human without it. It's funny because I've had this conversation with you about human babies and how
the pantry test,
undeveloped they are, basically when they're born. Yeah, the pantry test. I'm like, you know, a human baby is so dependent on others that you could put it in a pantry full of food. It would just be surrounded by food ready to eat, and it would starve, you know? Yep. And that shows you, like, on his hierarchy, ooh, physiological, food and water come first. A baby can't even eat food and water if you surround it with it.
Right.
So I would say, no, love. Love, you got to have, someone has to show that baby love.
Interesting. I mean, I have a lot of different notes here, and I'm sure this one's going to go over 30 minutes, but who cares? I mean, what direction do you want to go in?
Well, let me start with the definition.
Yep.
And let me say something about this definition, and then you decide what direction you want to take this. The definition for love that I got from dictionary.com is it's a feeling of warm personal attachment or deep affection, as for a parent, child, or friend. And I think that's a really incomplete definition.
Yeah.
I think that it uses words like attachment and affection, which are synonymous and not very well, you know, you have to go look at those and see what those are defined as. And I think it just goes to show you how hard it is to define love.
Yeah, that was a fairly circular definition.
Yeah. I think love's hard to define. It is.
That was one of the things I wrote. Love is a feeling. It is this. We're probably going to struggle at times to put things into words. When you see a happy young couple holding hands down the street and then you ask them to put that into words, what they're feeling, they'll just look at you ridiculously. You know, unless they're a fiction author or a poet or a Hollywood screenwriter, you know, it is very difficult to explain. How do you rationalize love? Like, let's logically explain and create a diagram flow chart for what love is. That'd be hard.
Yeah, obviously we're talking about it on a podcast. So we're at the beginning. I'm like, how do I describe it? How do I say what it is to me? And there's two ways that I would do that. Two basically small ways. Number one, for me, it's the best way to fill our hole. So I feel like we all have a hole that we're always trying to fill. And love is the only way of filling that hole that lasts and doesn't feel fake or empty afterward. A lot of people try to fill their hole with all kinds of other stuff. And if you ask me, none of them are real in the way that love is. And then the other thing I would say is, just think about it as the opposite of hate. It's like a magnet. Like, you want to be close, both physically, mentally, or all three, physically, mentally, and emotionally, with the other person who is the object of your love as possible. It's like there's this weird pull and attraction, and every good feeling that you can describe comes with it.
Yeah. I mean, all of that is good.
I mean, it's still, it's not.
We didn't know this was going to be kind of a dirty episode talking about Dave's love hole. So I apologize if any children are out there listening.
Well, yeah, this is.
Dave rams all kinds of things into his
love hole. Sorry, Marin and Dylan, that you're going to have to listen to this later.
Dad's love hole.
When you grow up. All right.
But to me, I think about love as a feeling and then also as an expression. So it's much easier to talk about expressions of love than it is the actual ephemeral concept of love, because you can't, it's hard to operationalize. It's hard to measure, describe it, know it when you see it, so to speak. And a side note that's connected to this, I'm in a field, organizational consulting, where they often want to measure relational aspects to try to understand the health of a department or of a company. For instance, I want to measure trust. I want to measure relationships. So then you create a metric to try to measure that. And there are a lot of people out there that believe if you can't measure something, it doesn't exist. And so then I just say, okay, well then, you have kids, yeah, let's measure love. I could create a metric in less than 1 hour that will absolutely verify and empirically demonstrate that you love one of your children more than the other.
Oh yeah.
What metric could we use? Let's see. Frequency of physical touch or hugs, frequency of saying I love you, how many gifts are bought for each children, the numerical value of said gifts, on acts of service, quality time. We start at, there is no way that is equal, and that metric will then prove the parents love one child over another.
That's great. I love that. And that's a good way to like point out to a business person
the ridiculousness of measuring lots of different things.
Yeah.
So for me, I would talk about, as a consultant or in my family, what I'm concerned with is the expressions of love. And my heritage is German-Irish, so I am not a big PDA person. Luckily, my wife isn't either. You know, so we express our love in different ways. And one of the best tools, and you'll probably hear this talked about quite a bit throughout this podcast, is Gary Chapman's The Five Languages of Love.
Oh, it's
great. I've found that to be so useful for relationships. They also made one for the workplace. But The Five Languages of Love, and this was from a no, he wasn't a psychologist. He was a marriage therapist. And they are spending quality time, physical touch, tangible gifts, words of affirmation, and acts of service. Those are the ways that we speak and express love to one another. And I had you recently take this.
Yeah, you can take the test online at his website.
It's free.
Just go, Google the five languages of love. But it really is... I mean, it's enlightening on yourself when you take the test, because you have to do a lot of introspection and think about what you value. And it's also interesting how when you take that, at least when I took it, I started to think about the people who are closest to me and how I thought that they felt about these things.
Right.
And then I did ask Lauren to take it as well, and she did. And since then, I've made a concerted effort to try and – quote unquote, speak her love language.
Yeah, Kizzy's is acts of service.
As is Lauren's.
And she's like, you can write me poems or tell me you love me till you're blue in the face, but if you're here helping vacuum, pull the weeds, mow the lawn, change the kids, that shows me you love me. And that's how we run our household is, now we do say I love you to each other at least once a day. That's important to us. But that acts of service thing, man. Mine's words of affirmation. What's yours?
Mine's physical touch.
That's right.
It's interesting. Which I think explains my feeling of them. It's like a magnet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like when I hug Marin, it's like I can't get close enough to her. You know what I mean? Like her chest is against mine, and I'm like, I don't know.
Well, Kizzy asked this morning, what are you guys' podcast? It was at 6:30 or so a.m. It's about 7:30 a.m. our time now. And I said, love. And she had our boy, Benjamin, holding him right next to me, and she's like, oh, it's done, all you do is just squeeze this baby and listen to his sounds, and that's it, that's love.
Man, I mean, that's, I mean, I can see that. I picked up Dylan yesterday, and he the way that he has got this weird way of showing affection where he like giggles and then he like kind of bites your shoulder or puts his mouth onto your shoulder, and then he'll look up at you and laugh again and then do it again.
Right.
And it's like expressions of love, and having someone else express their love for you is so warming inside. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I can see when Kizzy's saying that, that's what she's describing.
It's right.
Like, at its purest, he can't even talk.
Right.
But you know he's saying, I love you.
Yep. Yeah. So a couple things I feel or think about, but then I want to shift to a more controversial side of love.
Yeah.
When I'm feeling love, not in love, but love, I lose time. I lose a sense of time. I literally get these weird tingles at different times. It's hard to explain, but they're absolutely there. And I can feel that when I'm doing an activity I love, when I'm around people I love, or when I'm in just that moment of zest, like loving life, and just feel like I'm doing – it's just awesome to be alive. And oftentimes that's in the sun. So that, for me, is also connected to the sunlight.
Okay.
Uncertainty melts away. Fear fades when I'm feeling love. And I naturally catch myself smiling, which is weird.
Yeah, I was going to – there was some quote that I didn't include in my notes, but it was something like – it was Mother Teresa, I think. It was like, greet others with a smile because the smile is the beginning of the language of love. Something like that. That's an aside based on what you were saying about smiling. I think that all those things that you said at the end there, right? When I think about love, I think about calm and it's like all your worries and troubles melt away and you just feel free, you know, almost like you're floating or something. And yeah, that lost time definitely happens. But to me, I had a thing that I said was going to talk about that I think that explains. And to me, the driver of everything that we do is the need for love. I think that's true. I don't think I need to explain it too much more other than to say.
I think it's love, security, and connection. But
yes. And I think connection is another topic that we'll talk about on another time. And I didn't want to get too far into the whole connection thing.
But you can't feel love if you're, you know, insecure and not like, I'm not talking psychologically. I'm talking like fearful that your life's going to be lost at some moment, you know, by evolutionary biology. Yeah. I'm saying you got to be safe. And then once you're safe, you can experience love.
Well, it's funny because we think of some of the worst things that can happen to you as a lack of love and connectedness.
Right.
Solitary confinement. Right. The movie Castaway, right? Where he goes insane without having people.
Wilson!
He has to make a volleyball.
How powerful of a movie was that? Love.
I mean, it's great. Because hopefully no one listening to this podcast ever ends up in a situation like that, but it's a great exercise in how critical love is. It's like a vitamin for your soul and your mental state. If you don't have it, you can literally go insane.
Love for me is also, again, it's a feeling. It's that internal affect that you're experiencing that you don't want to describe and you shouldn't have to justify to others, right? Because it can be difficult to do so. But it's also a memory filter. When you are feeling that love, boy, memories are that rose-colored glasses.
Yeah.
You know, like you can have shitty things happen or a normal thing happen, and it's just all the positivity is amplified. Like love is a prism of optimism.
Yeah, I love that you say that because and I don't know who said this quote, but it was basically – and this is not the right quote, but it was basically boiled down to sometimes your eyes are as much projectors as they are receivers. And when you're feeling love, it's like everything out there is good. You notice all the good. You notice all the happy. All the bad and all the sad is not there.
Right.
It's so it's life-changing. It's reality-changing.
Reality. Excellent segue. Dave is literally on his segue right now riding around my room. Love. We've been in the sort of lovey-dovey, curvy-wervy, let's hug each other, kumbaya phase. But there's another side to love. What is tough love? What is boundary setting? What is giving people structure? To me, that is absolutely part of, for my view of love, 100%. That's as just as important as the hug and the kiss and the telling my kids I love them.
It is. And to me, I'll describe it. I'll say the first thing that came to my mind is it's the equivalent of financial planning and saving when it comes to money. Because what's your urge?
Ah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's
your,
good.
Spend. Your urge is to spend, right? Like to just buy now, to fill that need now. However, sometimes there's a need for restraint now in planning for the future. And by doing so, you're actually like giving your love in a better way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. What about spankings? Let's make it real concrete.
Oh, wow.
You know, so you could make the argument that I spank my kid because I love my kid.
I agree with it, and it's hard for me to rationalize that and turn it into words, but I know.
Well, you don't spank, right?
No, I do.
Oh, you do. Okay, that's right. You do. Yeah. We have some friends who don't, and it's not like we get into arguments with these people, but
it's a really controversial subject.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. Okay, let's make it more tangential for people. Excuse me, not tangential, concrete. Spanking is one thing in the household. Spanking in public is quite another spectacle. So have you ever spanked in public?
I took Marin out of a restaurant to the car to spank her. We were out to dinner with Lauren's sister and her partner, who I would imagine, and I don't know, guys, if you're listening, I would imagine that they're against spanking. They're very, you know, anti-violence. They don't like the fact that me and my brother watch MMA. And so I would imagine they're anti-spanking. But when I came back in, I did tell them. I said, I don't know how you guys feel about spanking, but I had to take Marin out to the car and spank her because I told her I was going to, you know, like, and I had to follow through with my actions. And it in the moment, it works. It does. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, I think I've had to spank, like, pretty quickly in the moment in public, maybe once, and it was when she was much younger, closer to two and a half or three. And it's again, when I say spank, it's not like I'm balling up the fists and going crazy, but it's more just the fear behind it, really. But what you just said is the key, in my opinion. If you're going to choose to spank, the pre-spank speech and the buildup is way more important than the actual spanking.
In the show, like what you said, I'm not like balling up my fists, I'm not like hurting her. It's not about, for me, it's not about the physical pain that you're inflicting on them. And as a matter of fact, the way that I've spanked Marin has been little to no physical pain. And I think I learned this from my dad. It's all about the theatrics of it.
David!
Well, he'll get his, like, make a lot of noise, right? So I remember him spank. I think it was when he was spanking Justin. Or maybe it had to be. He would literally be hardly hitting his butt. But he would be saying, pow, 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 pow. And, like, Justin was losing it, you know? Like, so it is. To me, it's more about the theatrics, the buildup.
Right.
And
whenever I have to punish in that way, and it's all just incentivization, right? It's disincentives. It's you're behaving in a certain way. It's behavior change management. That's it. It's behavior management. And so if positive incentives aren't working, if love and hugs aren't working, and that's where we prefer to start, but guess what? They don't work all the time. So then your choice is, are we those parents that just let our kids run rampant, which they will, and parents do allow that.
Right.
The thing that I think about it is as soon as my kid starts ruining other people's time, experiences, events, that's when it really begins to bother me.
I think about it like the seed of love is to love yourself. And to love yourself, you have to – and obviously this is going to be something we talk about a lot later. To love yourself, you have to be able to look at yourself and the actions that you take and be happy and proud of them. And you don't learn that on your own. You learn that from others and how others teach you to be and behave and act. So the way I look at it, I am correcting Marin, or I will be correcting Dylan. Dylan's too young. I haven't, you know, had to punish him yet. But I'm correcting them so that when they get older, they behave in a way that is self-affirmative, that they respect themselves. They love themselves. They have that seed of love within them.
Right.
And I feel like parents who are enablers, like you said, who just let them run wild and everything, they think that they're showing love in the moment.
Of course
moment.
They
they're,
yeah,
they're
of course
showing
they
love in the moment.
They're trying
and,
to.
And they clearly are.
Yeah.
But I think what that road can go down is the child not respecting themselves, because that child looks at their own behavior and sees that it is selfish, it is not respectful of others.
I'll be much more blatant with what I think. I think their parenting is 100% wrong. I think it's going to cause several issues. The one you're talking about, potentially growing up with the kid of not having that internal foundation of self-love. But then those people, I'm assuming, when another parent calls them out or some disagreement happens in public, then in front of their kid about their kid's behavior, they're not going to deal with that very well. They're going to get really defensive about what's going on.
Of course.
I probably go a little too stern with, especially my 4-year-old might be a little bit too drill instructor-ish with her, but I don't know. You know her. Do you think it bothers her? Or?
No. I mean, I think Claudia is very well adjusted, and I mean.
Here's Ben. Ben, here's a funny story that my wife just shared with Dave this morning.
This is good.
So one of the ways Ben shows love is he buries his head into your shoulder, and he'll bite, kind of like you said Dylan will.
Interesting.
But he's got full teeth now, a lot of teeth, and it can hurt like a bitch.
Yeah.
And he bit Kizzy yesterday or Friday to where it hurt. And I got him, and I held him in front of me, and I go, "Hey, don't bite Mom." My volume level was Claudia level instead of Benjamin, who's like 1 in a few months, and he instantly went from like normal face to bright red and crying, and I went from setting boundary love, Zach, to, oh my goodness, you know, cradling him for 10 minutes.
Yeah, and what do you think about that? I was going to say that. Like, every time after I spank Marin, she's like, you know, sad and whatever, and I go into this consoling, explaining.
How mode. Quickly do you do it?
Fairly soon after. First I go in explaining mode. First I say, hey, listen to me, look at me.
Right.
The reason why this happened is this. And I try to get her to state it back to me. Do you understand why that happened? Mm-hmm. So that she understands. I'm not just spanking her for no reason, right. You know? So I want her to understand why it happened, what led up to it, and why I'm doing it. And then afterwards, after she acknowledges it, then I go into,
yeah,
you know, I love you so much, baby. I do this, you know, because I love you.
I give myself at least 10 minutes. I try to treat it like a Pomodoro timer. Whoa. Situation.
That's more than me. That's more than me.
I'm not saying mine's right.
No, I'm not saying mine is.
Yeah, either. I'm just saying 10 minutes. Because I want it to sink in. I want her to experience whatever that feeling she is right there for a little bit. And then I can come in and say, again, you know I'm doing this because I love you. Why? Et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, it seemed to work well.
Well, you know what? I think timeout is sort of that.
Sure.
And
well, so it's disconnecting them.
It is. It's disconnectedness.
Solitary confinement for a toddler.
And the funny thing is I've learned that if I put Marin in timeout, I have to walk away from her. You know what I mean? Like if I sit there and watch her or she sees me or whatever and I'm giving her any kind of attention, that's not effective timeout. The effective timeout is where she looks at me and I look at her and I walk away. And she immediately then gets upset. It's because of that disconnection, you know?
Right.
And then there is a point where I let it, I don't know how many minutes I give it, but it's, you know, somewhere in that 5-10 minute range. But I go to timeout a lot more than I go to spanking in just about every instance that I can. It's almost like the spanking one is when, for whatever reason, timeout is ineffective or I need corrective action immediately and don't have the time for that. I mean, it's only been I've honestly probably spanked her fewer than 10 times, I would guess.
Yeah, I don't know how many times we've spanked. I mean, I'm not the only one that spanks. Kizzy spanks too.
Oh, yeah.
And she knows when Kizzy spanks, then she's really fucked up.
She's done something really bad for Mom, the spanker.
Let's switch gears. We've talked a lot about parenting, but not all of our viewers have parents or, excuse me, children. This self-love thing, because that's something I wrote down. Man, humans, they're built with, what do you want to say, the whole, Christians might say original sin.
There's something missing.
A book I just read called The True Believer by Eric Hoffer, which is a fantastic book, talking about how mass movements and or cults form. And it's all about our need for love and hate, actually. And his point, one of the things I took away is just how much self-loathing and self-contempt most of us carry around. Like, we just feel like we're never good enough. That's true. Even the high achievers, why do they keep wanting to achieve more? It's got to be better. It's got to be more. It's got to be legacy.
And that goes back to what I said about, I think love is the ultimate motivator. Other people will be like, no, it's money. No, it's sex. I think it's love. And I think it's – you have to take it to the level of absurdity for a good illustration of it, right? So you'll see these people who are celebrities, and they will have fans that have never met them but know everything about them.
That's called a parasocial relationship.
Yeah, and if you ask them, like, the celebrity dies, and those people are crying, and it's like...
Yeah, they go to their funeral if there's a public showing.
Yes.
That was really crazy.
And if you think about it that way, though, I mean, if you think about what it would be like to have love from masses of people... Right,
it's an aphrodisiac.
Yeah, it would be amazing not only to know like your inner circle loves you, but that you are adored almost universally. That to me is like that's a driver. Why the heck do you think people want social like icon status icons? Oh, drive a fancy car or whatever. It's because on some weird level they feel like a lack of love and acceptance, and they feel like they can get it through this physical thing or something.
Well, and then people look at them. There's physical glances. There's smiles. There's questions. Ooh, attention. Where did you get that? Yeah, absolutely. Attention. Of course.
So attention is sort of like a derivative of love. And sure. So you do these attention-seeking behaviors.
A fleeting outcome of love.
Yeah. Who's attention-seeking behaviors, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you do attention-seeking behaviors to try and get attention from people who you may or may not care about ultimately, but it's because you have some kind need of esteem and love. Yeah.
Yeah. But going back to the self-contempt thing, I mean, I know I feel it on a daily basis. I'm just like, damn it, Zach, that's not good. Like, I can get after myself so easily and so quickly, which is a motivator for me, but I can be way too hard on myself.
It's because you're your toughest critic.
Yeah, and I think all people are, but some more than others. Do you agree?
Yes, I do. And I think there's... To be honest with you, there's a balance between being a driven person who is critical of yourself and being a content, happy, self-loving person. There's got to be some happy medium that people have to find. You know what I mean? And I feel like I used to be, earlier in my life, more on the self-loving, content side. As I've gotten older and I've have other people that I want to support and that I want to, you know, I love that I've become more of that driven side. And maybe that's a good way for me to explain it to myself is sometimes, or for me, I've had to give a little bit of less of that love to myself so that I feel like I can give it to others. I don't know. That's a weird way to explain
it. So we only have so much love to give, so to speak?
No, I don't. I actually don't believe that's true.
Do you believe that's true that you can't necessarily love others as effectively until you love yourself first?
I do think that's true. I absolutely think that's true. And that was something that I've had in my notes because it was in an article by the Dalai Lama and in a Psychology Today article as I was putting together notes for the show. They both said that people who have like a hard childhood and aren't shown affection and love when they're young have a hard time loving people later in life.
Oh, yeah.
So clearly, if you don't get filled up with love and you don't know what that feeling is like, which develops your sense of self-love, right, then you can't give it to other people. I mean, it goes back to the thing that we talked about where I feel like life – we were talking about happiness, where life is just a conglomeration of your feelings on a daily basis. How you feel is what your life is, and how you treat others is a reflection of – how you're feeling inside.
To me, happiness is an outcome of love.
Oh, yeah. You cannot seek happiness directly. It's a byproduct.
But the immediacy of when you experience that happiness from love is different. For instance, the happy couple walking down the street holding hands, you know, singing merry songs, that is love right there. That's happiness. Immediate happiness, right? They get the immediate gratification. The spanking, the teaching, the lessons to the children – the happiness that they'll get from that boundary setting is later in life, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's sort of, yeah.
Let's talk about hate.
There's there's a lot of it going on in the national news right now. And it's interesting because if you ask me anything, now that we're on the subject of love, to me, hate is poisonous. It is self-destructive. It is, you know, if you dwell on hate, you feel the opposite of love inside. And who wants to feel that way inside? You know, if you talk about rose-colored glasses, love giving you rose-colored glasses and love giving you feelings of elation and joy and happiness, and then you say your life is just a conglomeration of those feelings, can you imagine how much time do you spend of your life hating or feeling that hate emotion? And then what does that do to you inside? And talk about rose-colored glasses, black-colored glasses. Everything looks awful, wilted, negative,
yeah, cynical, decaying. Pessimistic.
Everyone is, you know, people are bad, you know.
They're out to get you.
Yeah, everything is awful. And there's a, to me, if you talk about hate, like, I want to live as little of my life in that zone as possible.
Yep. To me, in Buddhism, the three poisons are greed, ignorance, and anger. Greed, ignorance, and anger. And hate is like combining all three of those and taking a big shot of those three things.
It is.
Hate is really interesting, though. It's one of the biggest unifiers that we have as humans, whether we like it or not. Yeah. It is something that brings people together.
Well,
it's terrible.
When I say I want to live as little of my life in that zone as possible, I have some self-recognition that without the yin, there is no yang. Without the dark, there is no light. It is natural and it is nature. And I do believe that everything that we're talking about now has been developed out of our humanity and our need for tribal reliance. So hate was a very useful thing when it came to tribalism, to survival of groups, because you had natural rivals and you had to band together, and hate was a useful emotion to describe why you do something to benefit only your tribe and to hurt the other tribe.
Yeah, and hate, again, why I'm talking about it is from the book The True Believer. Highly suggest people read it. It is very well written. Hate unites people and it divides people simultaneously. Love, if you allow yourself to experience it, can only unite people.
I know. And I think a lot of the constraints that were valid in the situation that I was talking about how we evolved and we were tribal, and it evolved out of scarcity and it evolved out of rivalism. And in the society that we've built right now, at least in, you know, first world nations, there's abundance. You know, there is – the scarcity isn't there like it used to be. However, our hate remains as if it were.
Right.
And the systems that we've put in place create unnecessary scarcity. I mean, I believe.
So interesting. So yeah. A few things. One, I wrote, we've created so many systems that compartmentalize, minimize, and impersonalize our love. We want to hide it. We want to act like it's not there. We got to be business professional. We got to put on literally our suits and our professional masks and go have arm's length distance transactions and interactions with people.
Yeah.
Really weird. Outside of that, talking about the hate really begins to emerge when you have discord, chaos, change. You feel a need for shaking up the status quo and revolution. And we're seeing that with different groups in society right now. And they're always there to a degree. But in that book, what he talks about is when a true mass movement forms, when a nationalistic, socialistic, or religious-driven movement forms and needs to overthrow a current system. Hate is one of the tools that they use to unify the group.
Yeah, and that makes people together.
Hating is hard work. Think about it. And we all hate something if you're honest with yourself. You can soften it and say, oh, well, I just really don't like this.
Right.
Whatever. We all hate something. We have to feed that hate. It's skill and drill. We have to almost discipline ourselves on a daily basis to remind ourselves of that hate and that nasty feeling and talk about it and keep it alive. We have to have laser focus on it. We have to put on blinders and not pay attention to all the good things that might emerge or the information that can challenge our hate. Those are just heretics and liars and naysayers.
Yeah.
And we create labels for people that aren't in our fun group of haters, and we dehumanize them.
Yeah, we have to constantly feed – when you said we have to feed it, we have to have self-confirmation bias in all the information that we consume. So we go out and consume news sources that confirm our hate.
Right.
It goes back to a little bit that intellectual freedom episode when we were talking about confirmation bias and things like that.
Right.
But hate is – it's hard to do when you say like that. But it also is like a self-driving thing, right? So like the more you hate – the more you have those black colored glasses on and everything looks bad, the more incentivized you are to continue.
Right, because it's circular.
Because you're feeding it. Yeah, it's a circular thing. It's like a downward spiral. And then you feel worse inside.
But then, of course, you want, you know, then you misery hate more people. Connected, right? Misery loves company. So
that's
then
right.
You try to build up a following of other people that
hate
similarly.
Yeah. You know, and there are, I mean, there are so many contradictions when we talk about hate. Groups, our society. I was just, you know, with everything that's going on in the national news right now, I was reading an article that basically says that freedom of speech is more at risk of being lost now in our country than it ever has in the past. And I've done a lot of reading and been taught a lot of things about the importance of freedom of speech. And so I'm someone who believes that freedom of speech is something that needs to be protected. I mean, we talked about that in our intellectual freedom episode. Now, on the flip side, hate speech to me, I mean, I don't see any redeeming value in it. It is, we're talking about love, and it is the opposite of love. It is negative. It unites people in a bad way.
So are you saying you would ban hate speech?
I'm not saying that. And that, and there's one of those weird contradictions that I have that, I'm trying to figure out how to rationalize that, because what I think is the problem becomes who is the judge of what is hate speech and who is the judge of what can and cannot be said and what is the punishment for breaking those rules and who is leveling it. It gives too much power to groups that can then oppress other groups based on those things. It allows oppression, in my opinion. You get what I'm saying. And it also allows for us to pretend that, you know, I said, without the dark, there is no light.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pretend there's no dark.
Right.
There has to be discourse around it. And if it's a taboo subject that nobody talks about, then we're acting like it doesn't exist. And I feel like that allows it to fester and grow. And
another reason people hate, if you are prone to hating, sorry, buddy, you don't love yourself that much. You probably weren't loved that much when you were younger.
That's right. That's right.
And you have a very difficult time connecting and expressing love. But here's it, the V word. You don't like being vulnerable and expressing your vulnerability. And we're all vulnerable as humans. And it's stereotypically more difficult for men to show their vulnerability. And we're seeing that in all these little hate marches going on with these militant organizations and the neo-Nazis and all of this stuff. Boy, those guys get together and they are just – they're so vulnerable to me.
It's
comical because they don't want to show any vulnerability. So they just lash out the complete opposite way.
Well, the one thing I wanted to say about that, about what's going on nationally right now, and we mentioned this on the intellectual freedom episode, is if you're on the virtuous side, so whichever side you're on that society has accepted as, quote-unquote, the right side, then you are hating the other side just as bad as they are hating you. It's, you think you act like you're being virtuous, but really you're expressing and exposing and uniting your group in hatred of the other group. It doesn't matter if the symbol that you're showing support for is, quote unquote, the virtuous one that society has, you know, said is a good thing. And it reminds me, I mean, these certain groups in the way that they're expressing themselves. If you think about what big religious leaders would teach, right? What would you do? Okay, so clearly, let's just talk about what's going on in the news right now. Charlottesville, white supremacists, hate groups who hate, or they're exposing their hate of other races. What is the opposite? What is the way to handle that? If you would ask any Jesus, any religious figure? Is it to hate them back, but harder? You know, is it to protest them and fight them and try to put national media to put them down as much as possible? No, it's to love them. It's to actually love them. That is so messed up. I mean, literally, but what is it? Matthew 5, right? Verse 44. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Love your enemies. Like, people say that they're quote-unquote Christian or good people or moral people. But you will look and also say, well, but to be moral and just, we have to drive out bad things, like negative things like hate groups and things like that. Well, yeah, you do, but not in the way that you're doing it. Because the way that you're taught to do it, that is the right way, is through love.
Okay, I agree. Marin's the person that was marching in that thing, and she's the one that got ran over and killed by that guy. Now tell me what you're just saying. Like,
all my emotions would go against it, and I would feel hatred inside. However, if I were truly to be doing the virtuous thing, I mean, think about Buddhism. Think about, you know, Christianity.
No, I get
think
it.
About anything.
I know what I was supposed to do, but I know what Zach would do.
Well, I know what I would do in the short term. In the short term, those negative emotions would boil up, and I would feel hatred, and I would lash out in the short term. But if I were to let that ruin my life, if I stayed in that zone, it would ruin my life
and it would potentially ruin Dylan's life. That's what I always think. Oh, if something horrible happened to one of my kids, and then I, you know, did the emotional reaction and lashed out and did something terrible to someone else.
Revenge.
Well, oops. Now my life is potentially ruined or incarcerated or dead.
Yeah.
And then my wife and or other child. Okay, Dad, what kind of lesson was that for us?
You know, it's so interesting to say that, because there is this weird attraction. Kind of like I'll make an analogy to when you eat, you're attracted to things that are not healthy, sugar and things like that. In the same way, revenge is an attraction like that. And watching a movie like The Count of Monte Cristo, a revenge story, where he dedicates his life to revenge and, you know, gets it in the most grand sense, there's this weird, like, fulfillment that you get the same way when you eat, like, an ice cream or, you know, a sundae.
Short term.
It's this weird short term thing. But then think about the moment after he enacts his revenge. Now he feels empty, and his whole life was wasted trying to get that revenge. Whereas if you do the hard thing, you actually do what this quote from the Bible says, and you love your enemy as yourself. Like, your life at that moment moving forward becomes better. Letting go and moving on and starting to rebuild that seed of love within yourself rebuilds those positive emotions, puts those rose-colored glasses right back on you. Your life gets better that moment. I've said this quote I don't know how many times on these podcasts. But it's between every action there and reaction, there is a space where you get to choose your reaction. And in that space lies your freedom and your ability to grow. I mean, it's so true.
To me, I think let's say if this young lady that was killed, her dad, or I could imagine if Claudia was the one that was run over, I know how I would feel. I'd get real angry. That's where I go. And I'd want to do something about that anger. But it's just another response of love, in my opinion. You're trying to express your love for that person that was ripped away from you. But you just take that, instead of giving a quick spanking, you take that reaction out of proportion. And you do something that's way beyond without having that buffer zone, the 10 or 15 minute buffer zone to think it through, right? And so then you respond because you're upset and you want to feel better, but also out of love for that person and to honor their memory. And then you do something atrocious, which rips apart. It puts the focus on you and that heinous act rather than that person's life that you were trying to express love for.
I think that that's a mistaken – you're mistaking love. You're mistaking hate for love in that instance.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, to me, there's – in that emotional moment, that's what people are thinking. They're thinking that's what they're doing.
I get that. They're holding on to something that they lost. They're trying to hold on to something that they lost. And they're trying to – and then they try to cope for that loss in a negative way.
Yes.
But I'll end this section because we've been talking about it. I'll end it with a quote. This is a great quote. Marin has a t-shirt that says something to this effect. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. That was Martin Luther King Jr.
Let's go a more fun direction.
Okay.
Sex.
Yes. How does love play into sex? Well, I mean, the foundation of sex is supposed to be romantic relationships.
No, the foundation of sex.
Oh, it's physical.
Biology.
That's biology.
Sex is for procreation. That is the biological function for having sex. Do you disagree?
No, I agree 100%.
Okay. So then from there, then we and our humans and our storytelling and our emotions, then it's, what did you say?
Romance.
Romantic. Connections, yeah.
Well, and I feel like, I don't know why, but when we talk about the subject of sex and we instantly go to biology, then I go to like the chemicals that are in your body and the way that you're driven and how there are differences in sex between who is experiencing it and how men, you know, like we said, if you go back to evolution and tribalism and stuff, men's driver there from evolution is to procreate with as many women as possible. Spread your seed, spread your genes, get them moved down. And I think that's one of the reasons why men have an easier time having sex without forming a romantic feeling for a woman, without forming a connection or love.
Or at least convincing themselves.
Or convincing themselves that they do, right? Being able to have, quote unquote, empty sex, one night stands, those types of things. Where I feel like that's an evolutionarily driven thing. It probably has something to do with the chemicals that are more present in men. What is it? Oxytocin, the love chemical, the bonding chemical.
I just think people in today's society, and I'm sure for many decades, but I'll focus on today, but just say, okay, I'm out doing the deed, you know, getting dirty, getting it done, one and done. And even though they know that or they believe there's no emotional attachment, that's still a substitute for love is what they're trying to do. It's a substitute for love.
It's supposed to be an act of love. Right?
But it's not in the way that if you're just out banging people out by the dozen, that is not real loving.
No, that's not.
There's no one way around it.
That's not. You know what's interesting? Let's talk about it this way. So if that's supposed to be an act of love, but it can be done in an empty manner, are there other acts of love that can be done empty? Volunteering, acts of service. What if you do those and it's just because, I mean, your motivation is impure? Is it still an act of love then?
Yeah, I mean, we're going down a philosophical path right now, which is good. We could, but I don't know. I didn't want to go down
that. Okay,
if you want to, go ahead.
No, let's stay on the sex thing. It was just a curious
Can people thought. In love who have real love, married people, can us, me and Kizzy, you and Lauren, can we have sex today that has no love involved?
Yeah.
So that can't happen.
Yeah. It's like when you're like, you had a hard day or whatever, and you're like, man, I would really just like a back massage. And I'm not going to reciprocate at all. You can do the same sort of thing with a sexual act.
Yep. I agree.
Just be selfish about it.
Right. How do you teach kids the difference between sex and love? Or the relationship between sex and love?
Man, I think the first thing you have to do is teach kids the biology of sex and make sure that they have a good understanding of that. And you have to do it at my folks and I think – where we grew up, at least, did it when we were pretty young. Like, and I think that we grew up in a time where that was kind of embraced, you know, like teaching kids about sex young protects them from teenage pregnancy and all this other stuff. And I tend to follow that line of thinking. So I think the start is teach them about the biologicals of it so that they can understand what that is and there's no confusion about it. And you make it a not taboo subject. And then once you've like shined the light on it and it's not taboo and there is no darkness or question or mystery, then it becomes a lot easier to talk to them about what we're saying now, right? Like you can tell them it can be a physical empty act that is a selfish thing, or it can be an act of love and
connection
and
beauty.
Yeah. And it's like, it's almost like a tool that you use, and you have to choose how you're going to use it. in the right way, or the right quote unquote right way, or quote unquote wrong way.
Yeah, the love sex thing, especially young, and we're biased because we're men. But you know, I knew think how I used to think about sex, right, versus love, and it's.
Oh yeah.
You know, looking back, clearly sex is a substitute for love. We're trying to get to that feeling of love, but God, we do it in this terribly empty way if you're going out and not in committed relationships, potentially.
Yeah.
If you're running through people trying to find love and using sex as a tool to get there, that's not a good thing.
No, and I feel like it can drive that, you know how there's that feeling of a hole. And I said, love is the best way that I, to me, to fill that hole. And I feel like some people will take sex and try, you know,
to fill that.
Yeah. To fill their desire.
So they'll fill their love hole with sex.
Yeah. I didn't. I was really trying not to get you to say that again, but I couldn't avoid it, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And they end up feeling empty afterward.
Oh yeah.
So they were like,
it's like taking an awesome drug. Ecstasy, whatever, you party and dance your night away, and then the next day you get up and all of those chemicals are gone, and
Or you bought a Ferrari and you like show it off to everybody, and then the next day nobody cares and it's parked in your garage, somebody's and it like, gets a scratch.
The new model's out.
Yeah. And you go look at you're in debt or what you could have done with that money instead you got this hunk of metal that's rusting in your garage.
Here's something else that I was thinking about with love, and this is unarticulated, but to me, entropy, the tendency for a system to move towards chaos, to me, there's some kind of relationship with love there. I think we set up these systems, we hold on to our hate and feed these hates because we don't want to be vulnerable. Whereas if we just naturally let our systems move, I think we would move towards love. But we create things that prevent our system from achieving our love equilibrium, if you will.
Yeah, that's kind of a Buddhist thought, right? Like the whole attachment to systems and delusions. Things and delusions. Yeah, where you should just let go and let life happen and focus on the things that actually do matter, which is the love that you have for others. Yeah.
Do you remember the movie, the remake, The Manchurian Candidate with Denzel Washington?
Yeah, I remember watching it, but the whole plot does not come back.
Yeah, the plot doesn't matter. But basically, the government has implanted this senator's son with a chip, and then they can activate this chip, and he's sort of like a puppet for them to do what he wants. But the way they activate it is they say his name. And in the movie, it's very enlightening to me personally. Private David Ponder, Private David Ponder. And then in the movie, everything around this person, you're looking at the scene from his eyes, gets very light, bright, and they have this music behind it. And that's like love.
Wow.
Like you're feeling what you're seeing. It's those glasses. Everything around you changes. And that's what you're looking for when you're trying to use sex as a substitute. And you might get it real quick there at the end of that sex, and then it's gone.
You know, we're still talking about love and sex and relationship type love, romantic type love. And I think there's an interesting thing that happens as a relationship develops. In the beginning, it is that, right? Yeah. So when you begin a new relationship or you're dating or whatever, there is light and joy and just thrill,
honeymoon excitement. Phase, it's uncertainty.
Yeah, there's a feeling of excitement. There's like a high. It is like you are on a drug.
Right.
But here's the weird part. Would you say that you feel that same way on a daily basis with Kizzy?
Well, of course not.
Yeah.
No one does. That's the point of his whole book, Five Languages of Love.
And isn't it weird that transition phase where you lose the high, right? And now you have to get used to all the reality of the person. So when you're in the beginning part of a phase, you build up a person that doesn't exist. They have no flaws.
Their pet peeves are cute.
Yeah.
They're fun.
Yeah, they're fun, right?
Kizzy doesn't put the mail away. That's okay.
Those rose-colored glasses are as rosy as they can get. And then when that fades away and you have to deal with the reality of, oh, man, there are some things that I don't like about this person or I don't like about their behaviors or, you know, I had built up too much of this and in reality it's not that. That phase to me seems like the hardest part of a relationship phase for people to get through. And it requires a strong seed of self-love. You know, we talked about that. You need to have that seed of self-love in order to get through that phase.
Right.
And you often you'll see people and everyone like, oh, they have commitment issues. They have whatever. And I kind of think it's that. It's what they don't love themselves enough
right.
to get through the awkward phase in the relationship.
I agree. What about this? People's adverse reactions to other couples, PDA, public displays of affection. Boy, again, it kind of goes back to hating a little bit.
It does.
Watching the happy couple strolling arm in arm, kissing, grabbing butt, whatever. What is often happens between other couples watching that? They then become an object of derision.
Yeah.
And you start poking fun and trying to tear them
competition.
Down.
Competition.
Well, they're out loving me. Let's break them down.
What is that? That's jealousy. That's
yeah.
envy.
Yeah.
That's
one of the poisons.
Yeah.
It's just funny, humans, because that happens for many, you know. People will look at that because that's a common pattern. A lot of people don't like seeing that.
Well, and talk about being on the quote unquote right virtuous side. Our society, if you would, I mean, I guarantee, go on any message board on the internet or whatever and count comments for PDAs and against PDAs. I would say in the United States today, at least my feeling is, the norm is against PDAs. I would think.
Yeah, I would agree anecdotally.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's why I brought this up.
So if you're in the court of public opinion, the virtuous side is to be jealous, envious, judging. All the things that are anti-love,
right.
All the things that are against the teachings of Buddha, Jesus, whatever.
Keep it in the bedroom.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Oh, we don't need to see that.
Yeah. And it's so hilarious. And I just want to tie that back to the court of public opinion and the things that are going on at any one time, just because – society has taken one stance doesn't mean that it's the loving, you know.
We have one couple in particular that are close friends, and man, they have that love. They probably both have physical touch, would be my guess, if is their top love language. And they just in public, like they're in their own little world sometimes, and it's awesome. And my wife and I were talking about them the other day, and I'm just like, it's so cool. They're not thinking about others or what others think, or they don't care. It's just like, it's their love. And it's not like they're making out by any means, but, you know, kissing, always holding hands, touching, rubs, little names for each other in front of anyone at all times. And our love is just not that way. Neither one of us, that's not how we do it. And so instead of trying to feel jealous, which is there probably a bit like, oh man, he really is loving her. I need to show my wife more love. He's doing this. I was like, it's just cool, isn't it? And she agreed.
I think the fact that you appreciate it, that you notice it and appreciate it and describe it as a positive thing is a reflection of you and Kizzy and your relationship and how good it is.
I will say it can get annoying at times too, but I was trying to focus in on the good things of their love.
Well, yeah. I would say the annoyance there is – because it's not your language of love,
right.
And you're seeing other people doing it, and you're like, oh, maybe that would be nice.
Yeah,
maybe
that should be my love language, right? And it goes back to that self.
Mm-hmm.
Is my hole? Do I need to fill my hole with
I
this
know.
Love language?
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah. Well, like me and my wife, our joke, we do date nights fairly often. It's important if you got kids, make sure you do that. Keep your relationship first. But we'll hold hands in the car on the way. After 5 minutes, maybe we're like, okay, that's enough. Our hands are sweating.
I know.
You know, and then so, we get to the spot. Okay, let's hold it again until we get, okay, that's enough.
Going back to
we
the
just don't need it.
Going back to the beginning relationship part, right, where everything's exciting and stuff, you'll, like, spoon with each other, and you'll be uncomfortable and
mm-hmm.
sweaty and, like, my arm's asleep.
Is this good for you, too?
Yeah, but, I don't want to move my arm because you're in that beginning relationship
but
part.
You've tied back to intellectual freedom episode like 10 times. The spontaneity episode is one way to put spice back into a relationship and find that those ways for excitement and love and just get creative, man. Be spontaneous and you can find those ways to get some of that young teenage excitement love going on in your life again. And it doesn't have to just be relationship. It could be with friends, you know.
Yeah,
do something different.
No, I love that idea. Speaking of friends, what is with the awkwardness with expression of love?
That is so weird.
With people on different levels.
I just was reading, because we're kind of getting to change challenge time.
Yeah.
But my top one was tell someone that you don't normally tell them that you love them.
I have and the exact – we wrote that. We never talked about this.
High five.
We came up with the same change.
Well, and one of them, I was going to challenge men specifically. Say I love you to another man, whether it's your dad, an uncle that's done something great for you, a friend. Tell someone that you love them. Because men, God, it is such a true stereotype. And our group of friends is so weird because we do. Like, obviously, me and you,
yeah.
Gary, Bart.
That's right.
Neil, Kelly.
Yeah.
I think I've even heard Jasinski, you know, yeah. say I love you once or twice. It's,
yeah.
So we say that. And I think that's meaningful.
I think it's very meaningful. It's cool that I understand what you said because I think, I don't know why, but men, yeah, they – telling another man that you love him is a weird taboo thing. I said, I think it's more for me. It's harder for me to tell someone that I love them based on how they communicate their love. And you talk about vulnerability, you know, like go to someone who that is not the way that they communicate themselves right. and make yourself vulnerable. Just say, hey, I just want to let you know that I love you. You know what I mean? Who knows how they're going
to
react?
And what are you setting yourself up for? To not hear it back.
Right. Exactly.
And you got to be okay with that.
Yeah.
And generational differences there too, especially with men and expressing the L word.
Absolutely.
My second change challenge is basically the same thing. If you already tell people you love them, instead of just telling them you love them, show them in some way.
Well, and mine was to really live out what is the quote-unquote golden rule. We mentioned it earlier. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your enemy. Go out and perform an act of love, you know, whether it be through volunteering or a simple act of service for someone else that you either don't know, right? So that would just be the love your neighbor as yourself. Or who you have negative feelings towards.
That, yeah, I mean, that's even, a real... Excellent that's, one,
I mean,
and
it's
a tough
hard,
one,
but,
right?
But can you imagine how enlightening that would be in your day? You know, you want to talk about putting on some rose-colored glasses, brightening your day a little bit. It would force you to recognize the good,
right,
in someone that you have negative.
With that one
about.
Though, you've got to do it with the right intent.
Yes.
You could do those things, and if it's
it can't
being
be
strategic and Machiavellian, that's not it.
No,
it's with out of love and then letting go of the response.
Man. That one's got to be the hardest change right. challenge I think we've said.
Well, I want to mention one more just resource that we've both talked about. Go take that five languages of love assessment. It's not a test. An assessment just gives you information about yourself. So there's no right or wrong answers. It literally will take you 5 minutes. If you're in a relationship with someone, have your spouse or partner take it as well. And then share your results. Because whether your relationship's really good, whether it's just like, yeah, we're – roommates living together or it's bad, if you actually know how that person wants their love to be expressed to them and then you just make a habit and be disciplined out of start doing it, that's how successful relationships work.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it's the emotion carries you on a tidal wave, and after that, it's maintenance and it's work and it's being disciplined and devoted to that person. And so if you can learn some things that can make them feel happiness and make you feel some happiness and create that spark and connection, this is a great assessment tool that can actually help you do that.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. I think we've hit so much awesome stuff on love.
This was an over an hour. It's our longest one.
And it's the most important one, and I don't feel bad about that. I would say this episode is one that I will listen to myself and go over again. Sometime I'm feeling bad. Sometime I'm feeling angry. Sometime I want revenge. I'll come back and I'll listen to this because this is – the things that I said will be me talking to me, me giving advice
right,
to
course.
Me.
Great point. Well, thanks again for listening, everyone. Hopefully tune in next week. What are we talking about next week? Pride.
Pride. That's
pride. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Yeah. So as always, experiment with life.
And we love you.
Love you.